the good part is I get to incorporate in myself the things other people have said and try not to repeat them or try not to refute them. The other bad part of it is that you've all said all the interesting things and I've got to conjure up something you haven't heard yet to say. So in this talk that I'm going to have is not much on the sort of classical linear model order reduction. I'm going to sort of start from a different point of view, tell you a little bit about the kinds of problems that we're trying to attack with model order reduction and generate these parameterized and nonlinear model order reduction methods. And just so that you know where this talk is going, I have some methods. None of them are any good. None of them have good theory. I'm going to just present you with a lot of problems. All right, so let me talk about what this thing is. So it's a multi-technology phase lock loop. So there's a phase lock loop in every cellular phone. It's used to pick up the actual frequency of the transmission. It combines a voltage-controlled oscillator, which is trying to generate the same frequency as what's coming in, so it can use it to do internal signal processing. It compares it to the incoming signal, filters it, and does some. Sometimes it divides it down if it needs a divided signal that's synchronized to that incoming clock frequency. You can imagine if you're designing one of these phase lock loops that as these new technologies start to emerge, for example, this micro machine resonator, which is an on-chip resonator, actually the largest thing in your cellular telephone electronically is a quartz crystal. If they could put that on chip, this thing is a few hundred microns big. It's much smaller and it could make possible wristwatch cellular telephones for better or worse. This is a carbon nanotube FET front end, which you might use because at some point the people pushing carbon nanotubes were claiming that they were low noise. Now they're not so sure. But one might look at this kind of system that you're putting together and try to use this kind of new technology, maybe this microresonator. Maybe you might decide to route some of your signals optically instead of electronically and have to worry about the optical to electrical transducers. The point of mentioning this is it does look like, at least in integrated circuit technology development, that it isn't going to be a repetition of what we've seen in the past years where there is two or three or four elements. You have a couple different transistors, a resistor, a capacitor, and an inductor, and that's about it. It looks like the future is going to be a much more diverse set of technologies where people who are trying to design systems are going to need models for technologies that are not all that well understood. So, the carbon nanotube test, I pulled this off. Some of these are pulled off the web. I noticed them. Generally, I know they're actually put. So the microresonator is, they're trying to get it into loop filters. So none of these things are actually in use at the moment, except the micro machine resonator. Not that one, but another one is used in some microelectronic systems. But it's an example where there are lots of different technologies you might try to employ to get higher performance. But in making those decisions, you have to actually design the system. And the point is that there will be new technology, and they will need models for that new technology. And they'll need models that are efficient enough that they can actually run something like a phase lock loop, which if you want to watch it capture an incoming signal, you have to run through thousands and thousands of these cycles of the incoming 2 gigahertz frequency. You do a very, very complicated simulation of this complete system, and you don't want to try to deal with models of these individual devices that are too expensive to evaluate. And you'd like to be able to design the system. You'd like to be able to see if it makes sense to use new technology, which means you have to be able to optimize the design. It's not quite good enough to look at a new technology, sort of plug it in and sort of use its nominal values. You often, in order to see if the technology is worth using, you have to be able to optimize it some and see if it's manufacturable. So there's this sort of initial assessment of new technology, which is what's possible with a combination of technology. Will it really improve the system performance? Can I make a smaller cellular telephone with this new technology using a microresonator? One of the problems with that particular microresonator I showed you is that when you actually tried to deploy it in the system, it has some input-output impedance characteristics that make it really very hard to use. Bless you. Then there's this issue of system performance optimization. That is, you know, is it better to use new technology for something, or should you try to use a new technology which is smaller and trade off for making some other part of the system more complicated? You really need to be able to deal with the whole system. And in order to do that, that means you need to be able to have models for the individual pieces of technology. I mean, that's why we care about model order reduction. It's because the designers need those things so that they can do this hierarchical simulation that allows them to encapsulate the physics and automatically move between these levels of resolution in the description of the devices that let them do very complicated system analysis while still having high fidelity models for each of the individual components, and also have these hooks for optimization so that they can really check out whether they can make a better design or make it possible to enhance the performance of the design. So that's really at the bottom of it. You know, when we think about simulating these entire systems with dynamically accurate models for all the components, the reason we care about model order reduction is because we want to make it possible for designers to do that for new technology. And there's one way of doing it. So you could say for the circuit part of it, you use this big system of ordinary differential equations. So if you're going to be fussy, it's really a differential algebraic system of equations. There's the carbon nanotube transistor, and the only numerical models I know involve doing molecular dynamics or atomistic simulations. The microresonator, it's a coupled 3D electroelastofluidic simulation, which is a mouthful. The optical transducer, you know, it's device and optics, and the interconnect, which is 3D Maxwell's equations and full wave. And you've got to capture all those three-dimensional partial differential equations of very complicated geometries, and you want to simulate now, capture which will go on for thousands of cycles. And obviously this is never going to finish. You're never going to be able to do these complicated 3D simulations for the kinds of complicated waveforms you need to deal with in order to do the system simulation. It's just never going to happen. But you do have these low-level, high-fidelity models for each of the individual components. So what do people do now, and then how can we change them? Well, what they do now is there's the person who's the expert on electrical optical transducers. There's the person who's the expert on the carbon nanotube field effect transistor. And there's the person who's the expert on the MEMS device, the microresonator. And they sort of hang around, and they sort of get a good feel for the technology. It takes about 6 months. Then they sort of, after a while, they write down a low-order differential equation system that describes its input-output behavior. And they do it because they have some physical insight into what's going on. And people are really good at this. Nothing we're going to do numerically will match their abilities. But of course, they know a lot about their systems. They know a lot about both the system and how it's going to get used and how they expect it to be used. Now, they do make mistakes, and these mistakes can often cause problems. But the issue is, it takes a long time to develop these models. It means that if you have new technology and you want to see if it will make a difference in your system, you have to wait till somebody really understands how it plays in that system before you can actually try to design with it. So it really makes a big deal in how long it takes to design with these new technologies. One of the reasons people claim that micro-machine devices are what they call MEMS, why there aren't very many commercial products, like we saw the airbag accelerometer, I guess it was the gyroscope. We saw a micro-mechanical gyroscope earlier. There are very few micro-machine products like that. And part of the reason is the companies that try to produce those products require 5 to 6 years in development before they go from initial concept to commercial device. And it's because they don't have very good tools. They can't even simulate the device because they have the partial differential equations. They know how the system is described. But they can't put together models that are efficient enough to let them really simulate what's going on in the system. So this is kind of the numerical macro modeling paradigm. So when we think about model order reduction, we're thinking that we've got some low-level partial differential equation description. It may be atomistic. It may be continuum equations. It's complicated geometry, coupled physics, maybe even a statistical thing. I'm not going to talk much about that. And out of that, you run that simulation for a while, and out of it, it pops a low-order model, which you use as your system model. It's accurate, maybe not the most efficient model in the world, but it's good. It has good fidelity, and you can just use it. And that way, when you pick up a new piece of technology, you throw it into the simulator, it pops out a reduced order model, you plug it together with all the models of all the other components, you simulate the whole system and optimize it. I mean, that's really when we're talking about model order reduction, that's what we want to do. We want to make it possible for people to use their technologies and their systems and generate the models they need to simulate the system performance. And in order to do that, it's really not been possible without fast enough 3D solvers. Now, some of it's because computers are faster. Everybody has a workstation now that can do an awful lot more now than it could 10 years ago. Some of it had to wait for very fast 3D solvers, some of which are around fast 3D field solvers. Some of them are the fast integral equation methods. Some are just improvements in more classical finite element type methods. But the whole thing doesn't make sense if you can't simulate the entire device you want to model simultaneously. So if you have to rip it apart into pieces and simulate them separately and patch it together, this doesn't make any sense. So it's only recently where that's really been feasible for complicated these complicated micro devices. And then there's model order reduction that sits on top of it. So you start with this mesh 3D structure with 100,000 or a million or 10 million degrees of freedom, and you generate a low order model with 100 degrees of freedom or 100 states. So when we talk about big systems and we worry about algorithms that can't be worse than order n, they can't even be n squared, that's what we're talking about. We're talking about systems that start out with a million states. All right, so there are some places where the whole paradigm works reasonably well. It's not perfect. There's some theory missing in many of the pieces of the algorithms. There's still some issues, but there are a lot of commercial companies that take interconnect structures and generate from these interconnect structures good representations of the terminal behavior of a piece of wire or the wire that connects up transistors. They're based on using fast 3D solvers, efficient MOR methods, usually based on Kreilov subspace methods because they're interested in low frequency behavior. They want to know the delays of the interconnect, and then you match moments around zero frequency. But there's some issues. Sometimes the models aren't passive. That's not always an important thing because they may not actually be doing any more than trying to figure out the length of the wire. They may not actually putting together a differential equation system that describes the whole system, but sometimes they are. And then there's some issues about, now that we're up at high enough frequencies, to where the, oh, that's a good way to describe this, we refer to it as being a distributed system. So the dynamical system in Laplace transform domain, it doesn't have an SI minus A inverse. It's something more, some more complicated function of frequency. Oh, hierarchical SCD. So the, if I think of the interaction between, say, I have a collection of charges over here on my right hand, and I want to evaluate the potential of this cluster over on my left hand, I can write down that matrix and expect that it might be low rank because it more or less looks like if I cluster these charges together and evaluate it at the center of the cluster of evaluation points, I get almost the same answer as if I did them individually. Now, yeah. So, now you think of taking an SVD of small pieces and patching them together to make an SVD of a larger region of space. It's not easy to do, but there are some methods, and I'm not an expert in those methods. So, the Chard Kapoor. There are a collection of different ways of doing this, and some of them. Well, I don't want to, that's a little aside from my talk, and not my area of expertise. So let me just remind you what the model order reduction problem is before beginning the test with hierarchical SVDs. So, you know, we start with the original dynamical system, and the only thing to mention is that, you know, n is a million here, and typically A is sparse or has a representation that makes it possible to matrix vector products fast. And we want to reduce dynamical system to 10 by 10. So we've all written down something like that in every single presentation you've seen so far this afternoon. So let me draw the picture I like to draw when I talk about the projection framework, which is some but not all of the model order reduction methods, which we think of as representing X as some weighted combination of these vectors that we choose. And we think of, therefore, taking the X and projecting it down to a lower dimension. We then, when we do that, also sort of test the system of equations by projecting that residual down. And the point about this figure is to say, well, we have a mapping from X to AX in our dynamical system. You can think of this as positions of velocity if you like to think of mechanical systems. And we have a representation of from the reduced X to A reduced times the reduced X. And that A reduced is easy to write down. It's just the two matrices that represent the projection and the projection and the representation surrounding A. So you can write down what that thing is. And because I'll come back to that when we talk about nonlinear model order reduction, I just want to make a quick point about it, which is, you know, even if I don't have A, but I have the ability to do matrix vector products, I just multiply A times the entries in the U vector, and then it gives me a collection of vectors, which I take the inner product with the VQ vector, and I get the reduced A. So all to do that, all I need to be able to do is to be able to do a matrix vector product. I don't need anything more than that. Then there's the big question, which we've all sort of talked about. So what are the ways we can pick U? How should we pick U and V? Well, it's, you know, nice to remember that, you know, a long time ago people used to use eigenvectors, and it's actually not a bad thing to use for U and V. Sometimes it works pretty well. Sometimes it's pretty modal decomposition, and you can still find some older people in mechanical engineering who still use those methods. <Sicker? laughs> Yeah, no, people still use eigenvalues and eigenvectors, and they're quite effective in certain settings. The other is to use time series data, and then take the time series data into a singular value decomposition. In using time series data, you have to be very careful using time series points, because you have to monkey with the inputs to your system and make sure that these time points don't end up lining up with a dominant eigenvector of your system. You can use frequency domain data, that is, you can solve the frequency domain representation of your system if it's linear at a bunch of different points and use those vectors, or you can use Kreisler subspace vectors, or you can use singular vectors of system Gramians. There are lots of different ways of picking these. So I wanted to mention this because it's sort of the theorem nobody's put up, and I wanted to put it up. This is this Nolan matching theorem, which was due to Eric Grimmie, which is one of my favorites, which says that it's really the thing that makes a lot of gives you a lot of flexibility in these projection methods if you're interested in doing things like matching moments. And roughly what this theorem says, and the notation is maybe a little complicated, it says basically if you you form this Kreisler subspace of A minus SJI inverse times B. You form that Kreisler subspace, and as many entries in that Kreisler subspace as you use, that's how many derivatives of the transfer function you match at that particular point. And the nice thing about it is you can take any number of points, and you can pick five different S's and five vectors in each of those S's and match five derivatives at five different points. And then you can do a similar thing in terms of V. And you can pick completely different points, and then you just get all these derivatives and functions matched. So you can go to extremes. You can use that projection method to just insist that you match at points just by solving the system in the collection of different points. That might be the equivalent of frequency domain POD would be to do projection methods where you just match the function and not its derivatives. Or you can get carried away and match lots and lots of derivatives at zero. It's a very common one to do because one of the early successes of using model order reduction was in dealing with these systems where you were just interested in delay, you were interested in long time behavior, so you really wanted to capture low frequency very accurately, and the rest of the stuff wasn't so important. So I just want to make a comment about that. So that moment matching property I mentioned, actually, you get exactly the same number of moments matched whether you decide to write down the system x dot equals ax plus b and project a, or if you invert a and put it on the other side. You get an unchanged transfer function just by multiplying through by a inverse. But you actually, when you do the projection, if you do it on a inverse, you get something different. And the problem is these projection theorems which say something about moment matching still hold. And I just wanted to remind you, when we think about matching moments and matching points, that we keep in mind that there are a lot of things that aren't being told by that. That is, so here's what happens if you project on, this is just a discretized heat equation. So it's just, it's the time derivative of x is equal to the Laplacian of x. So all it is we're looking at exciting it at one end. Imagine I have a long rod, I heat it up on one end, and I measure the temperature on the other end, so I expect it to go up to the first end's temperature. And this is just what happens if I use one, two, or three of these modes. And the reason I'm interested in this, you can see that, I've got two here, q equals 1 and q equals 2, and here's the exact one. You can see it only takes a couple of them before you get the long-time behavior very accurately. This is matching around zero, and the short-term behavior takes a little bit more work. What I wanted to do is to show you what happens when you don't invert A and do the same thing. You get a very different set of reduced order models. And the only reason for putting this up here is not to give anybody a hard time about whether they're projecting A or A inverse. It's to make the comment that, you're talking about matching moments. You really don't have a very strong handle on exactly how accurate your model is. I mean, you can match moments and still have a lot of degrees of freedom in the model you generate in terms of exactly how accurate it is. All right, so nevertheless, we have methods that can do an awfully good job of matching pretty well. And the things you might want to do might depend on what you're interested in. So the x's, the dark x's here, is the frequency response of, this is just a piece of interconnect. So the dark x's are its exact frequency response. The red curve was generated by a moment matching method, a Kreisler method, at zero, so you can see it matches very well at low frequencies and then runs out of steam, and after that it's not so great and gets lucky at the end. Then the other one is a TBR method, and it's exactly what you'd expect, which is it never matches perfectly, well sometimes it does, but it matches pretty well at most of the frequencies, it's never too far off, whereas the Kreisler method can be quite far off. So that's normally what you expect about the two different methods. And, you know, there's this question about when we think about using balanced truncation or using the interpolation methods, there's always this feeling, you know, a lot of us have had it and worked around that area for a while, that maybe if we pick the points just right, we would get the same answer out of an interpolation method that we would out of a truncated balanced realization method. And it would be nice to know the answer to that question. It would be nice to know the answer to that question just because it would be nice to know the answer to that question. But what I'm going to tell you now is maybe it would be nice to know the answer to that question because the interpolation methods are easier to generalize. At least it's easier to think how to generalize them. And the TBR type methods maybe are harder to think about how to generalize. But if we understood that connection, then we could generalize the interpolation method and hopefully recover the kinds of accuracy, wideband accuracy that you get with TBR. So I just want to say, all right, so that's it on the classical linear stuff. I'm now going to talk about these things that are parameterized and nonlinear, for which, you know, nothing really works all that well. But let me show you one that works kind of nicely. So here's an interconnect problem. So this is the problem. They have a model of the interconnect, this piece of wire. They want to know the delay from the output of this logic gate to the input of the next logic gate. They have a model for the gate that includes the resistor and the voltage source, and a model for the load, which is just the capacitor. It's also important what exactly that model is. The point is that you can go ahead and do the model order reduction to try to come up with a reduced order model that will accurately predict the delay. It's a linear system. You set up a linear system of equations. You use Prima, for example, because these matrices have this positive semi-definiteness property if you care about passivity, or you can just use it even if you're just evaluating for the time domain behavior at the end of the line. So that means you calculate this U, you hit the U by generating Kirlhoff vectors. This is the span of G inverse B, G inverse C, G inverse B, et cetera. One we've seen now a bunch of times. So here's the thing, right? So they do that, and then they say, well, the problem is that we want to actually change the, this is the rest of the reduction. So these things, just so you have a sense of them, the interconnect models they might be getting from an extraction might be on the order of 1,000 to 10,000 unknowns, and the model they want has to be under order 5 because they have to evaluate it in milliseconds because they're going to evaluate a million of these in order to figure out how fast the microprocessor is. So here's the thing. You do this reduced order model, and the nice thing about doing a reduced order model is, well, you have this original description, these 10,000 elements that describe this interconnect model, and you'd like to calculate its reduced model and then throw it away, because you want to go on to the next one and you want to store all this information. So the problem is, what they do is they play games with the models of the gate. They change the drive resistor and its voltage source, maybe they change the load. And you'd like to be able to have some way of trying to update the reduced order model. That is, you don't want to go back to the full model and update it. So imagine in this particular system where we had Cx dot is equal to, or Cv dot is equal to G times V. In this case, when we change the drive resistor, we're actually updating G by taking it and adding what is a rank one, generally a rank one, update, which has to do with the one change I made in the resistor. So we have a rank one update to the original G, and we could just go and run through the model order reduction, generate a reduced order model. It turns out that I could just go ahead and, using the vectors I used in the projection, generate the projection of V down, multiply that by 1 over R, and just update the reduced order model. What's interesting about this is it actually generates exactly the same model as if we redid the Kirlhoff subspace model order reduction. Now what's interesting about this one is it's really a low rank update to G, but it's a low rank update where the update has to do with the input vectors. It happens to show up in just the right places in the input vector. Because it's like that, it means the Kirlhoff subspace that we generate from G inverse B, G inverse C, G inverse B, etc., is going to be unchanged by this update. That is, we are not going to change the span of that space. And that's why we get exactly the same reduced order model as if we were reduced. So that's a parameterized reduced order model. We have a reduced order model that represents not just the system, but also what happens when we change the system a little bit. It's a low rank parameterization. It's easy to see how it works on the Kirlhoff subspace method. It's a very simple observation about how you see this is just based entirely on those rank one update formulas for the inverse of G. But it's very straightforward how this works in the Kirlhoff subspace method. It's less straightforward to see how you might be able to get such a parameterization out of a method that's more like the truncated balance realization method. Although there has been some work on using what are called linear fractional transforms, and I don't know these things, but apparently they've been able to deal with some of these kinds of things. Oh, I'm sorry. I'm changing this drive resistance. Yeah, so that's the point. This is a very special kind of perturbation. It says let me give you a better picture of it. So here's my sort of my interconnect system, and the thing I'm playing games with are things at the periphery. So in order to use this, I have to set up, when I think about my model order reduction, in order to use this kind of perturbation, I have to make sure I make perturbation in elements that are represented in the input vectors. They have to be in B, or I can't perturb them. I can't take an element in the middle of the matrix and change it.
But you can, because all you have to do is
introduce one more
port.
Yes, that's right. You have to introduce, so every place you have as an input, you can do it.
Yeah, you have to
introduce
one more port.
Yes. Yes, you're right. But then if you want to change a lot of things in the interior, then you need lots of ports and you get into trouble with the reduction. But here's a cute thing you can do with it. So, please.
If you're only changing something about the input, how do you just draw a reduction graph draw a box around the boundary and just
Well, so I would agree with that, except often those things at the boundary are really setting the important dynamics of the system. That is, it may be that I put large capacitors at the boundary, I want different modes out of the interior of the system. So the more you cut things up like that, the more you have to hope that your interior model is a much more, a much wider band model. Right? So it's much better if you can just re-reduce, and here you can. But then there's some cute things you can do with it, like if it turns out your G matrix is singular, you can make it non-singular in this case, you could add an extra resistor, make it non-singular, do the standard Kryloff method by inverting G, and then do the rank one update and deal with the singularity that way. So there are things you can do with that. Yep?
Go back. You say you can't change the resistor, and
so I do the Kryloff subspace method where I match moments. So that algorithm, if I run it on the updated G, that system, run that algorithm, I'll get a reduced order model. Yeah, it'll have the same number of moments matched. It'll be exactly as if here I'm updating my reduced Moore model, and I'll get exactly the same answer as if I re-reduced the original model. So this is sort of the simplest of parameterized reduced order models. It's a reduced order model, it's parameterizable, we can do some things with it, like, for example, get rid of a singularity if we want to. But that isn't a very hard problem, but it's not so clear how to take that kind of method and use a TDR type method and come up with fast ways of updating it based on this lower end perturbation. It doesn't seem so easy. Now, if we had a very tight connection between these interpolation methods, like we knew where the interpolation points were, we actually might be able to come up with a method which is equivalent to TDR that we could do this with, which is why I so appreciated Professor Antolis' talk. So let me now talk about another case. So that was low rank, and as Jaijit pointed out, right on the periphery. Right? It was a very specialized set of perturbations, and you might imagine that that could come up in a lot of practical examples where at the edges or the ports that you're going to connect up to your system, you might want to make some changes on those places, and it might be nice to include that in the reduced order model. This is a spiral inductor. It's a commonly used component. There are some capacitors in here, and I only want to make one point about this, is one of the design variables might be the spacing between these wires. Now, if I take the spacing between the wires and change it, and then run a 3D electromagnetic field solver in order to figure out what this spiral inductor's behavior is, I'll end up with a system where not just points on the periphery change, not some low rank part of the matrix changes, everything changes. So suddenly we're in the case where we have a system of equations where it changes and not in a low rank way. All right, and we want to be able to recalculate the behavior of the spiral inductor without having to go to 3D field coverage time, and there are lots of things you could do with that. You could do optimization much faster. You could gain some insight about what's going on. So what I want to do here is just write down the equations for what might happen in a large parameterized system in a very stylized way. So here's our original system in Laplace transform domain where it's E0, E1 to ET, and each of them is multiplied by an S1 to an SP. Now, somewhere in there is the Laplace transform variable, S, and somewhere in there is the geometric parameters. When you write it down this way, there's no real difference between them. That is, you can't see the difference between a geometric parameter that multiplies by one of these matrices or a Laplace parameter or maybe some product of the two. When you look at it that way and say, all right, now this system, I want to go ahead and calculate a reduced order model that takes into account all the variations with these different S's. Here's my reduced order model where I projected all these different matrices down. I want that reduced order model to not only represent the behavior with respect to frequency, which is now just one parameter, but with respect to all the other parameters as well. Now, how do I go about constructing such a reduced order model that has a similar frequency response and also has the right behavior with respect to geometric parameters? Well, you pull out the interpolation methods and say, well, all right, I write down the transfer function, tells me the state from the input, and I do the Taylor series expansion. It's a p-variable Taylor series expansion. And I just go ahead and say, well, all right, I'll pick projection vectors by picking the span of this space, which has to do with all these different little matrices. So I'll just go ahead and do the projection method where I match points in the derivatives. So I'm now going to match points in these geometric parameters, not values of points, I'm going to match the derivatives. Now, it would be really nice if I had good ways of picking those points. There was something better than, well, I think, the spacing goes this far, the frequency range is like this. But the connection to something like a truncated balanced realization or using system gradients requires that I understand how to do a multi-dimensional setting for those methods. And I don't know how that generalization goes. I wouldn't even know how to start. You tell me when to stop. Okay. There's a lot. Why is Laplace? Just because it's J omega. Why is it any better than my geometric parameter? That's right. That's right. Oh, I see. You're going to talk about multi-dimensional PD. Yeah, all right. So JJ worked on these methods. Oh, no, you're not. Okay.
I'm going to talk about that later.
But not in public. Okay. But yes, you're right. It's
Well, you want to be able to,
when you look at it as a point of view of interpolation, you say, all I want to do, just a moment, all I want to do is capture how this inverse behaves as I vary the S values. Right? If it's SI minus A inverse, and I want to know how that inverse behaves as I change S, that's just, and I want it to work over a wide range, why should that be any different for J omega than it should be over my range of geometric parameters? And separate reductions. So by separate reductions, meaning I go ahead and calculate a different set of vectors. So how do I patch the system together after I've done that? Well, I have to get the inverse of the sum of all of them. I'm not sure I see how to do that. So maybe you see how to do that and you can write it down for me. Okay, so there's another question. You're quite right, and I set up this one because this was the easiest one to do. That they might be nonlinearly dependent on some set of parameters, I could try to treat with doing a series expansion in those parameters and then write down these matrices for the series expansion. So SP might, for example, be S1Q. Yes. Yes. We'll make this very... You mean because each of them has a different range of parameters I care about? Well, if I do it with interpolation, I say, well, I have my range of frequencies, I put my points down here. I have my range of this parameter, and I put my points there. I fill out the space with points and pick them well, whatever that means. And then in terms of interpolation, it all seems like it all just goes through, and then if I want to match with all those different points, I get the projection vectors, we just model and go. A lot of work. Well, let's see. If I have 10 parameters and I only match one point in each parameter, I match 3 points in each parameter, don't match any moments, I'll get 30 vectors and I can predict that.
So you're
Ooh, well, that's good. I have no response. Oh, that was good. Okay, so that was parameterized, and I didn't mean to suggest that, oh, we have the solution to this problem. The point is, there are lots of things you could do with that, and that was just one simple-minded thing you could do by just appealing to an obvious generalization of interpolation. And it seems like this question of picking the points becomes front and center in that kind of a method, and you'd like to understand some way of taking whatever understanding you get from dynamical systems and have a sample of frequency points and bring it over to something more complicated or multidimensional. All right, so now I'll talk a little bit about the nonlinear system, and I will have equivalently not very good algorithms for that one either. So here's the nonlinear dynamical system, and it's a simple one, because x dot doesn't have a nonlinearity. I just have some nonlinear function of state, and the input comes in a linear way. So there's really only the one nonlinearity, and then when I talk about doing this nonlinear model of reduction, I can construct the same projection interpretation, but the problem I have is I have a reduced version of x, I have a reduced version or a testing of f of x, and I don't exactly know how to go between the two the way I did in the matrices, and just to sort of write out the equations. So if I say I'm going to represent x as a weighted combination of these columns of v, and I plug it into the differential equation, and then in this particular case decide to test with the same set of vectors that I represent x with, then I will get a representation of f, which you can't really use. It's not a reduced order model in the sense that I care about, because it doesn't count as a reduced order model unless it's cheaper to evaluate than the original system. So if you start with a 10th order system and then have to go back up to the 10 to the 4th or 10 to the 5th variables, evaluate it up there and then project it back down again, it's not a reduced order model. If you do that, it's way too expensive and you've just failed on the nonlinear model order reduction problem as far as we're concerned in this setting. So it has another problem. It's not just if you want to use projection vectors taking the vectors, you also have to come up with a representation of f that you can reduce as well. All right, so here are a couple methods that don't work all that well. So it's a nonlinear model of reduction problem. If we could figure out that, we could put pretty much every physicist out of business, because a lot of what they do is coming up with models for physical systems, and every engineer. So, it's going to be maybe a little tougher. So you might imagine, for example, trying to represent f in a multidimensional Taylor series. You have f of x naught plus its Jacobian plus its second derivative, its Hessian, times the Kronecker product of x. So this is just something that gives me all the x squared terms. And I could continue on like that. And then I could do a reduction of j and w just by picking a set of projection vectors, however I get them, and going ahead and projecting j, which is just a matrix multiplication, and then also projecting w. W here is a three-dimensional thing, so you have three vectors with which to project it, and generate a reduced order model that way. And I could do that, except for the one small problem. If I have a 10-state system, then J is 10 by 10, or 100 entries, and W is 10 by 10 by 10, or 1,000 entries. And if I go to the cubic case, well, it's growing exponentially with order. So if I want to make it more accurate, this is a disaster. So it's not a reduced order model. I mean, in the sense that I have fewer states, but I once again have this enormous cost to evaluating the nonlinear function. Yeah, so you might try to exploit the structure of W and its higher derivatives. That's right. There are lots of things you could try to do. Though somehow, whenever you, just like when you match, there's always a sort of exponential floating around when you sort of match high derivatives in multidimensional settings. It shows up in the parameterized reduced order model as well. So you can do some things with it. If your problem is mildly nonlinear enough that you can get away with a second order term, maybe you know something about the W's that you can collapse it in some way, then maybe you can do something with that. So since we got from this moment matching approach, we can either match lots of derivatives at one point or match lots of points or do any combination of the two. If it didn't work to match derivatives in F, maybe we should match it at a lot of points. So you can imagine now trying to pick a collection of points in state space and constructing linear models that you'll paste together. And how should you pick those points? Well, then it's just look like POD, so obviously it's got to be ad hoc. We're going to calculate a trajectory. We calculate a trajectory by following x as it goes through the behavior, its response to an input. We go ahead and pick a set of those points and linearize around those points. Now, obviously, we can't pick out the entire state space because that that's an enormous volume, and they won't be able to pick good linearization points. But maybe by sticking on some trajectories that we actually produce by simulation, we can get some reasonable values to use. And then we have a collection of linear models which we can reduce in any one of a number of ways and just come up with a weighted combination of those linear models. And then we have an efficient representation and some way of doing the reduction so we can get a reduced sort of model that's cheap to evaluate, and we know nothing about it. We don't know how close it is. It's not even clear, you know, what sort of problems it works for and what sort of problems it doesn't work for. But at least you can do the reduction. So we can get, it's another one of those cases, and you know, which Sasha always fusses about, which is great, I've got a reduced order model, but I know nothing, you know, I don't have any guaranteed accuracy, and I could use one as a reduced order model if I were unconcerned about accuracy. So, and it would be passive. So there you know, is some reason for believing it might be good, but there's not much theory about it. It's an attempt, and it's definitely ad hoc. So you might expect some interesting questions come up when you try to do something like this. And I just want to mention one of the interesting questions that comes up because it gets you to ask something about truncated balance realization that you might not ask otherwise. So imagine we do this. We calculate an initial position and we get a linear model around that initial position. And from that we get a W and V using some reduction algorithm. We get our W and V by either a Kryloff method or by calculating the system gradients. And then we're going to simulate the training input, collect a bunch of other linear models, and we're going to project them all with the same state space. You might argue that there's some ways in which you could maybe use different projection vectors and at different points to do better than this, but for the moment, bear with me and just assume we're going to try to keep the projection vectors at each of the points to be the same. So if you try to do that, this is a nonlinear RC line problem. It's about a 100 state system. It has all these diodes in it, which are quite nonlinear. They're exponential nonlinearities. What I'm showing you here is we trained it. That is, the trajectory we generated was by putting a step in. Then we tested it by putting in a sinusoid. And what you're looking at here is, this is just, if you just linearize it, you get this sinusoid that's too large. The exact answer is in red. And then you see if you use one of these trajectory piecewise linear models, actually a fourth order model, you really match quite well the solution. So there are cases where it works, which is about all I can say about the method. Yeah, similar. Well, it depends where you are in that transition. There's an RLC one that's a little more complicated, where more of them are on. So, if we look at this issue about how, if we're going to live with that kind of a method, and decide, well, all right, we're going to we've got all these linearized systems we've got to reduce, and we want to figure out whether we should use the Kryloff method or balanced truncation. We get a set of projection matrices, V and W. What we're doing differently here, and I just want to show you that sometimes it works. So for that RLC transmission line, which JJ correctly points out is not as difficult as it looks, and it looks pretty easy, we have, if we use the Kryloff method and increase the order of the reduced order model, we get, as we add more models, and this is a Kryloff method where we do moment matching at around zero, which might not be the best thing to do, and compare it to a TBR method. We do much better in a lower order with these TBR methods. We got the TBR vectors around the initial linearization point and use the same TBR vectors to project all the other matrices. Now, we tried it then on this micro-machine switch example. So it's a nonlinear partial differential equation. Parts of it are in one dimension and parts of it are in two dimensions. Nothing is in 3D. But it generates a system with about 1,000 states, and it's non-symmetric and an indefinite Jacobian. And when we do, what we did then was to apply both the Kryloff method and the TBR method to reduce the linearized model. So we got this piecewise linear model, and then we reduced all the linear matrices. And we saw this very odd phenomenon when we compared the difference between the exact solution and the reduced order model solution as a function of model order. That the Kryloff methods sort of, they did okay, and they never got worse at least. But then when we did the TBR methods, we got this even odd behavior where it would usually be, on the even ones, it would be much better than the Kryloff method, and on the odd ones, it would be much worse, and it's because the methods were actually unstable. So, let's ask ourselves, well, what exactly was going on there in the TBR methods? Why did it produce unstable models when the Kryloff methods did, and why even orders? And you can sort of see if you look at actually what the the reduced Jacobians look like as this is a couple of different linearization points. So the blue are the first linearization points when we're looking at the eigenvalues. Here's the real axis, so we're seeing complex eigenvalues. And then we're looking at the eigenvalues of the reduced one for Q equals 7 and Q equals 8. What you see in Q equals 8, we have the complex conjugate pole pairs, and in Q equals 7, one of those has sort of been pushed over onto the other axis. In some sense, there really are 8 eigenvalues want to match, and when we want to match 7, we end up breaking up one of those complex conjugate pole pairs, and that's what's producing the unstable model. And a nice way to see that, and let me just sort of see what the problem is. So we start with TBR by picking its based on an initial set of matrices, or computing it based on an initial set of matrices, and then perturb those matrices and ask if the TBR reduction still works. And it's kind of a robustness question associated with the TBR methods. So we're interested in the answer to that question just in for our model order reduction scheme, but it seemed like an interesting question to ask about TBR. And what you get is, well, if you look at the Hankel singular values, and they have this sort of exponential, but not quite the nice exponential. It's not, you know, it's going down, but it's not going down quite exponentially, because the system has lots of complex eigenvalues. What you see in it are these, if you look at the singular values of the controllability Gramian, you see these pairs of singular values. So the pairs, of course, are connected to the complex conjugate. The complex conjugate eigenvalues of the original system. Actually, some of the other curves of the singular values, I think, earlier this morning, had also those pole pairs. You could see them in it. But the point is, if you actually go ahead and think about what's going on there, if the two eigenvalues of the Gramian are close to each other, it means their eigenvectors mix up, more so when you perturb the matrix. So the closer the eigenvalues are, the more mixing you get between the eigenvectors. And that just says, well, if you're going to do this and you're going to do the truncated balanced realization and you're going to do, you get all these Hankel singular values, you should use them to decide a good place to chop off. That is, you shouldn't break very close by singular values. It's not a good place to break. You should go one order higher, one order lower. All right. So there are lots of other methods being used for these nonlinear model order reduction techniques. There are projection methods, of course. There's data mining methods. There are methods based on support vector machines. There are nonlinear generalizations of controllability and observability. Sasha's looking at finite state automata. There's a bunch of sophisticated sampling and fitting procedures. You know, I just showed you some of the things that come up when you talk about projection methods. And frankly, there's just a lot of things. So I was going to talk about one last problem, I think, given I've already used my 45 minutes, and Gene told me that I had run out of my time to talk. Let me make one last comment. So when we talk about trying to do reliable model order reduction for these parameterized problems and for these nonlinear problems, I mean, we should keep in mind that what it would mean. It would mean that people who generate models of transistors by looking at partial differential equations, the diffusion models, Schrodinger equations, and generating compact models, we could do this automatically. All the stuff about multi-scale modeling, where you start from the atomic level and build up PD descriptions, all the continuum mechanical descriptions that you get from sort of somebody who understands the atomistic model enough to figure out, you know, that you should describe the stretching and the behavior of a rod by an elasticity. I mean, all those things, you can imagine getting generalizations of those things that would be derived entirely numerically. It might be sort of a different point of view about the whole issue of understanding physical systems, along with, of course, you know, solving our engineering design problem, which, you know, we can use to pay our salaries. So that's all I wanted to say. I wanted to sort of give you not solutions, of which I have none, but show you a collection of different problems, show you some of the things that show up, and maybe give you some thoughts about what other things to look at in model order reduction, and you know, also to lend some application incentive behind trying to understand the connection between TBR and these interpolation methods. So, thanks very much. Yes. Because it has to, otherwise the system is not nonlinear. Yes.